You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Fall's a great time to get outside, and our next guest has some extra motivation for us. He says there's a lot of joy to be had in collecting stuff from the natural world that tells a story and gives us a sense of wonder. Maybe that means seashells on the beach or feathers in the woods or maybe a fossil in a pile of rocks.
From an early age, Gordon Grice has been collecting unique artifacts in nature and displaying them in his cabinet of curiosities. Now in a new book, he's sharing his advice on how you can start your own, and he talks about the joy it can bring kids and adults.
Gordon Grice joins us now. He's a Wisconsin-based nature writer and author of the new book, Cabinet of Curiosities, Collecting and the Understanding the Wonders of the Natural World. Gordon, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Gordon, so these Cabinet of Curiosities, they go back a long time. People have been fascinated with these things they find in the natural world for a long time throughout history. So how has this idea changed over time?
It really started with the ancient Romans, as far as we can sort of nail down. As a religious use, where the collections would occur in temples devoted to specific gods. So the Oracle at Delphi, for example, had a group of curiosities associated with it. But what really sort of brought it into modern times was in the Age of Exploration, when Europeans were exploring and sometimes exploiting other parts of the world and bringing back especially biological specimens that they didn't know what to make of. And so it was a huge impetus to the science of the time, but also to just sort of the average person's curiosity about what existed out there in the world.
Well, your Age of Exploration, I understand, started around age six. Gordon, can you tell us about the first Cabinet of Curiosities you put together?
For me, it started with a cigar box, which was what my mom found for me because my dad smoked cigars. And I just kept bringing in things that interested me from that I found on our farm. And so, for example, I found a skunk skull. And I, by the way, I don't recommend that every kid handle something like that, but but I did. And just interesting items like that. We had wild pumpkins in the area where I grew up, and that was this kind of a neat little gourd-like seed pod that will last for years. And so just interesting things that caught my fancy and that I wanted to keep all went into this little cigar box until my collection got too big for it.
What are some of the most unusual things that have gone into these cabinets of curiosity over the years?
Human mummies, for one thing. We still there are federal laws now to prevent most of this happening, but over history there were there was a great interest in mummified human bodies, and so this was a rich source of research. And you'd see bodies, especially from the American Southwest, where the arid conditions would naturally preserve bodies at times, and also from the Inca culture, where there was some attempt to preserve them on purpose. So that's one thing that went in. Another interesting kind of specimen was the teratological specimen, or freaks, as they called them. So two-headed human babies, or animals that were born with too many limbs, and you know, some really gruesome sorts of things over time were turned up in these collections.
Now, in your own cabinets, and the ones you're suggesting that people do, I think you're having people look a little closer to home and less into that unusual territory. Why try to find this sense of wonder in the animals, vegetables, and minerals in the world around us?
I spent a lot of time talking with kids and doing library programs and community programs to help kids learn about things like frogs and bugs and things like that. And what I found was that kids are really interested in that sort of thing up through a certain age. But I think in our culture, we're sort of encouraged to move on from that and to start learning exclusively from books and from teachers instead of keeping an eye on the natural world and what it can teach you. And so I really felt it would be useful for people to know that it's still okay to look around at whatever you find in your yard or at the local park or on a nature walk, and that it really will teach you things that you're not likely to learn anywhere else.
We're talking with author Gordon Grice right now. He's the author of Cabinet of Curiosities, Understanding and Collecting and Understanding the Wonders of the Natural World. And Gordon, what are some common things that grown-ups or kids might be able to find that you think would have a good place here in a Cabinet of Curiosity?
I think people should put in anything that interests them, but some of the easy things to find are seashells, for example. Some of the things that I talk about are strike people as gross, and that's fine. But a lot of things that people will find, really appealing aesthetically, like seashells and like flowers. In the book, I talk a little bit about how to preserve those, and seed pods from plants in your area. One of the things that happens to people when they start to look for just interesting things like seed pods and flowers is they suddenly realize that there are hundreds of them around them that they never noticed before. And so it's kind of a really quick way to get in tune with what nature is offering us.
And you write in the book, and you spend some time talking about this, a step two is, after you've got this interesting thing, you've got it in your cabinet, classifying it, trying to figure out where it fits into the natural world. Why is that important next step to take?
I have to say I don't think it's important. I think, if you just want to look at the thing and be interested in it, that's great. But there is another interesting layer there if you are interested in classifying it. One thing that I tried to do in the book is to show that every living thing is connected. And things don't just exist out there in isolation, but they've all, they all are linked together ultimately. And when you begin to try to classify things, you begin to see the overall patterns of, for example, what type of plants there are in the world. And that leads you to what they actually do. And I think ultimately, if I can sort of preach a bigger message, this kind of helps people see how ecological issues play into this. The more you appreciate the little things in nature, the more you are aware of the bigger issues that we need to be concerned about.
I was thinking about some of the things that I have in my home that would fall under this category. I've got seashells from New Zealand. I have dried flowers. I have rocks from Lake Superior. So what do you think is the benefit of having them all in one place? How does that change the way we think about them?
It's not just having them in one place and leaving them, but sort of playing with them and grouping them in different ways. So, for example, I have a set of animal skulls. And sometimes those go into just a big shelf with all kinds of specimens. But other times they can just be in a row on a shelf with just skulls. And what you see is sort of an automatic lesson in comparative biology. You start to see, how is a fox different than a cat? And their behavior is revealed by their bones. So it's kind of just this lesson. You just sort of learn things without really even trying about what goes on in the world. So it's sort of like a still photo that reveals so much of what actually happened.
Let's get practical, Gordon. Say there's a parent-kid combo out there saying, yeah, we want to try something like this. What are some good things that they can use as their cabinet? Could be the cigar box you mentioned. What are some other handy ways to make that first collection?
In my house, we have old CD cases that we just use for putting whatever we find in there. So that's a real easy place to start. But it could be almost anything. When I was younger, we would get cases from soda pop bottles from the store, and that is sort of just they just had sort of little natural cubby holes that we could use. So just any sort of case or collection, wine boxes, with little individual compartments for the bottles. And you can also, if you're a little more ambitious or a little more handy, you can build a case of your own, kind of depending on what kind of specimens you have that you want to put in there.
Do you have any advice for us on how to preserve this stuff? Some of it, could decay a bit, things like flowers, maybe feathers. What do we need to know about helping it last?
In the book, I talk about different ways to preserve those, and unfortunately, they all have kind of different methods of preservation. But there are ways to do it, and some of the methods involve salting, for example, to take all the moisture out so that rot doesn't happen. With plants, and especially flowers, the old-fashioned way of pressing the specimen between the leaves of an encyclopedia still really works well. And so in the book, we go into methods of handling several different things like that.
We're talking with Wisconsin nature writer and author Gordon Grice. He's making the case for getting out in nature and collecting some of the cool stuff that you find out there and starting your own cabinet of curiosities.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you ever done something like this? Had your own cabinet of curiosities, even if you maybe didn't use that phrase? Is this something you did as a kid, something you do with your kids now? And what kind of things have you found and added to that collection? What's the coolest thing you've found in nature and brought back? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking to Gordon Grice. He's from Wisconsin. He's the author of Cabinet of Curiosities. And we're talking about the joy of getting out into nature, collecting some natural items, things like shells, fossils, seed pods, that sort of thing, and displaying them, too, along the way.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is this something that you do with your family? Do you have your own sort of cabinet of curiosities? And what's in it? What is the coolest thing that you've ever found that really makes you think about the natural world and our place in it? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go right to a caller. We've got Lynn on the line in Bayview. Lynn, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
What do you want to tell us about, Lynn?
Well, I feel so much of a kindred spirit to Gordon because I started collecting when I was very, very young. I don't know how old I was, so young. But I would make my mother save pimento jars or any very small jars. And wherever I would go, I would take a little teaspoon and collect the soil sample. It could be sand. It could be just soil. But whenever we loaded up in the station wagon, I was sure to have a teaspoon and a bunch of pimento jars so I could collect soil samples and sand samples from all over the country. And then I'd come home and I'd arrange them on my shelf in my bedroom. And it was just so fascinating. I learned so much about geology, just the different combinations of minerals on the surface of the earth that get worn down by erosion or water, air, whatever, wind. But it was totally fascinating, and I thought I was the only person. So I'm so happy that Gordon shares that need to collect.
And Lynn, I got to ask, do you still do anything like this now?
Well, yes, actually, that early entrance into geology, it's encouraged a passion in what we do with the Earth's crust. So pottery making, glass making. I'm very, very interested in collecting great works of manipulated earth sediment materials.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Very interesting. So Gordon, soil samples is part of our cabinet of curiosity. And what she said that reminded me of something you said, having all these things side by side helps us learn about them.
Yeah, and I just want to tell Lynn that one of the really great experiences of my life was visiting the lab of a forensic scientist who had probably kind of the ultimate version of what she's talking about, soil samples from thousands of locations. And in his case, he was using it to solve crimes because he could tell, for example, wherever in the country a certain vehicle had driven, because he had the soil samples to compare with the soil that was recovered from the wheel well of a car. And so it was this really amazingly practical use for what I'm sure started as something just like what she was doing. And he, with microscopes, could tell amazing stories about what happened in the areas where each sample was collected.
Well, Lynn, thanks a lot for that call. And Gordon, something I want to make sure we talk about is the stuff that you can't collect. I know things like eagle feathers you're not supposed to take, and maybe the same is true for other things like bird's nests. How do we know what it is okay to pick up for our collection and what we need to leave in the ecosystem?
The best approach, I think, is to call up wherever you're going to collect and call the authorities, or the DNR, for example. If you go into federal parklands, for example, basically everything is supposed to stay where it is, even bones, because they're part of the ecosystem and they return nutrients to that system. But if you simply phone up the agency that's in charge of that, ask them what things are okay to collect and what things need to be left where they are, that's probably the best approach.
Back to our callers now with Jackie in Milwaukee. Jackie, hi.
Hi. I remember from my grade school days many, many years ago that they had a project where the kids had to go out and gather fall leaves and identify the tree or plant they came from, and then we preserved them between sheets of wax paper and then built a notebook of them. And what it did was help kids early on develop an interest in biology and how you go about identifying what a plant is in nature. And I thought it was a great project. And in the end, you had a really beautiful notebook, too.
Jackie, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Gordon, a classic there, the leaf collection.
Yeah, that's back in history. They called that the herbarium when you make an actual book out of it. And, again, it's just such a wonderful tool for learning, exactly like Jackie said. You can get easy, handy guides that help you kind of go through the steps of how to identify a leaf and tell what tree it came from.
We're talking to Gordon Grice. His new book is Cabinet of Curiosities, Collecting and Understanding the Wonders of the Natural World. He's making the case that, hey, kids, and maybe not just kids, should go out, collect stuff, maybe even in your own backyard, find interesting, curious stuff, and display it. A cigar box, a cabinet, what have you. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Do you do anything like this? Do you have a collection of your own, or did you? 800-642-1234.
And Gordon, when you get one of these really cool specimens, it sounds like part of it is the specimen itself and how cool it is to learn about it and hold it and look at it. And part of it is the finding. When you look at your own cabinet, what piece from your collection really stands out as being one that was really exceptional?
Wow, there are so many. I have this is another one that I'm not going to suggest that kids try on their own, but I have a set of egg sacs from black widow spiders. And this is one of those that a lot of people think is terribly gross, but it's very interesting to me because of the landscape where I collected them, and I had to learn how where the spiders live, what kind of shapes of things they like to get into, for example, car tires. And then when I collected them, I kept them as live specimens for a few years. And, of course, spiders don't live long lives, but they do leave behind these interesting artifacts that you can collect.
Wow, so what does a black widow egg sac look like?
It's about the size of a marble, and it's made out of what looks like cotton or maybe even linen, depending on the species. So it's a very fine, round sort of thing, but big enough to examine closely.
We'll go back to our callers with George in Brookfield now. George, hi.
Hi. Well, not necessarily natural, more archaeology. I have an arrowhead collection where I would find arrowheads when I was a kid behind my house where I grew up in Missouri. And they've always fascinated me, you know, to think of how they were made. Some are perfectly symmetrical, and you'd be hard-pressed to see that they weren't somehow machine-made or something. They're just perfect arrowheads. So I've always been enthralled with those.
George, thanks a lot for that call. So, Gordon, human-made stuff, and I could see, depending on where you live, colonial era or 19th century human-made stuff being an interesting part of a cabinet of curiosities, too.
Yeah, I had childhood experiences really similar to George's, collecting arrowheads with my grandmother. And especially in areas where the Dust Bowl was a big part of the ecology back in the 1930s, which is long before my time. But it had left this effect of having blown away so much soil that artifacts like arrowheads were easy to find. So it was just such a learning opportunity, first about how the structure of the stone that allows them to be sort of machined by hand, as George was saying, and secondly, about the culture that made them, and then thirdly, about the climate change that caused them to be brought back to view for a later generation.
And Gordon, just very briefly, anything still on your list to collect?
The whole world is still on my list. I don't know that I need to actually have it in my cabinet, but I there's so many things I'd love to photograph, from interesting kinds of geodes to bones to tropical plants.
Well, thanks so much for joining us and telling us about it today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That was Gordon Grice, a Wisconsin-based nature writer and author of the new book, Cabinet of Curiosities, Collecting and Understanding the Wonders of the Natural World.